Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Newism podcast, where we talk to social innovators and disruptors to discover how they would shape a new, more inclusive economic system fit for the modern world. Our guest today is Dr. Mara McKay, who is the Director of Social and Creative Economies at the British Council, where she seeks to develop more inclusive and sustainable economies and societies. The British Council's DICE programme drives growth and progress on the UN Sustainable Development Goals, with a particular focus on empowering women and girls, fostering youth employment, addressing inequality, and supporting people with disabilities and other marginalised groups.
So I'm talking today to Mara McKay, and we're in central London, and it's a beautiful sunny day. And before we go into talk about some of your life and your thought, you know, we've spoken before, and what this is about, it's Newism, is about, we think that the global economy is no longer fit for purpose and needs to be replaced by a new economy. Is that something you agree about? And if so, what might that new economy look like?
So, yes, it's absolutely something I agree with. I think the way we think about that is quite important. So in terms of inspiring people and, you know, feeling like there's actually a possibility to move into a new economic paradigm, one of the ways that I think about it a lot is in terms of what's primary and what's secondary. So I don't think it's necessarily about deciding that everything we have right now is wrong. I just think we have made things that are secondary, our ideas of institution, our ideas of capital. We've made those things primary, and because we've made them primary, they seem immovable. So we need to get back to a sense of basics around what economy is all around, is all about, which is about people, and is about how we care for one another, essentially, and how we care for our planet. So we talk a lot about those things, but we tend to get stuck in feeling like we can't change existing systems because they seem so immovable, but actually everything that we have right now in terms of existing systems are things that we have created and built, so there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to rethink them.
So that's really interesting, and kind of what the theme of this whole discussion that we're having around Newism. But you touched on an interesting point there, because you know, the economists of the past that built the economy system, it was built in a sense of values. There was values. And you said there it was about the people and the community and care. Is that an essential value, do you think? And what other values are in there if we're building this new economy?
I think it has to be about people. You know, it fundamentally has to be about people and about our planet. And if we can sort of start there, then there is something very wrong. And I do think that the current economic system that we have, where you go back and really look at where it came from, and, you know, there's lots of different ways of analysing this. So you can think about the Enlightenment, and, you know, we think about that as being a point of serious progress, which it was. So I think part of thinking about a new economy for me is about recognising where something that represented progress at the time no longer does, because we've sort of almost misrepresented where it came from. So Einstein, for example, is, you know, thought of as being absolutely a sort of father of scientific revolutions. But if you look at some of his quotes around, you know, you can't solve a problem from the level of consciousness that it was created. There's a sense now that we just have to evolve the way that we are thinking about what matters. Yeah. And I think that we have got lost in some of the structure that facilitated something that did represent progress at the time. So the Industrial Revolution, when it happened, did provide jobs and livelihoods, and you know, there are people who will become very animated at sort of sweeping statements that capitalism is a bad thing, because there's lots of evidence that it has lifted millions of people out of poverty. And I think we have to hold on to where progress has taken place and see it for what it was. But then we also have to understand that what we tend to assume as the, you know, components of that progress were just vehicles. They weren't, you know, the primary things.
So that's an interesting point. I was just at a conference in New York. One of the themes of the speaker was that we were living in the middle of or the start of the fourth industrial revolution. Mm. And because we were in it, we actually couldn't articulate it was going on around us. I don't know if I quite agree with that. Maybe there is an industrial revolution going around, but I think we can shape it. I'm quite positive about it and constructive, which is why I wanted to talk to you, because I know you've got constructive thoughts about that, that possibility. Can you talk us a bit about that, what you think the possibilities are in the middle? Or do you think we're living in a fourth industrial revolution? Is that right?
I think we're living in a revolution. I think we have a sort of tendency to need to provide or, you know, pinpoint vocabulary around things that sort of sometimes isn't helpful. I think that it's a combination of there are things that we don't understand and things that we can understand. I'm just out of a conversation with a friend and colleague who's working with UNDP across Southeast Asia, where they are talking about an inclusive industrial revolution. What I think is happening is that there are, from every aspect of life, you know, whether that's your development organisations, your economic development organisations, your academics, your grassroots organisations, people are really waking up to the big fundamental issues that are very challenging in the world, and everybody's looking for some kind of way of addressing those. We don't have the frameworks to do that, and that's the challenge. So there's a combination of people who are prepared to sort of step outside of existing frameworks and sort of say, we just need to do something different, and we don't have the answers. And for me, one of the biggest challenges and also ironies around a lot of the social enterprise space, or a lot of the sort of new revolution economic space, however you want to call it, is that we innovate and then we test those innovations vis-a-vis the logics of the old economy.
Yep.
Now, that makes no sense, but we do it all the time because we don't have any other way to have proof that we're doing the right thing. So there's something about a collective boldness around just understanding that if we are going to, you know, shift in a big way to changing the way that we think and the impact that we have as a result, then we're not going to know the answers in advance, and we're going to have a level of courage about that and a level of commitment to work together around that.
So is the way forward here people just to do some things regardless? And it seems to me that in the world there are people out there just doing things for the right motives. Or is it more that we need to be sitting down and saying, actually, we need to have a big idea, and we all need to kind of, you know, buy into that big idea and then do it?
So if I'm allowed to go back to my roots, I remember, you know, I joined Scotland's Economic Development Agency as a graduate when I was about 23, about 20 years ago. And at that point in time, Scotland was thinking about big picture stuff. There was a lot of scenario planning going on. There was a very sort of inclusive sense about what economic development was. And I remember, first of all, falling in love with economic development and inclusive economic development. But secondly, some of the things that used to come up repeatedly, and one of them was this idea of a both and logic, which, you know, is one of those things that gets banded around a lot. But I think it's a really important point. You know, we're living in a world now that is so increasingly polarized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're not going to find any solutions without having some kind of way of seeing the truth in two seemingly different but similar things at the same time. So I think it's both of those things. I think there's an extraordinary level of innovation. So, you know, if you were to sort of stop the world and sit back and look at the millions of social entrepreneurs and intermediaries and ecosystem players and, you know, even the big institutions now who are very seriously thinking about and investing in solutions for a better world, all of the pieces are there. The system answers are not there, and the way of mobilizing those things to be sort of, you know, economies of scale are not there. So it's both. I think we need to be encouraging, you know, more and more of those solutions and finding ways to feed those. But we do also need people to be sitting in rooms saying, you know, enough of us doing our own thing, even though that's a good thing. because we have the mandate and the resource to actually invest differently, spend a bit of time more thoughtfully with other partners and players so that we can create a different kind of economic infrastructure so that all of those entrepreneurs and solutions have a different home in which to grow. So I don't know if that's a cop-out, but I do think it's both of those things that are necessary.
No, I agree. I think it's very interesting because I do agree with you strongly. It's we're in a space that people kind of instinctively know something's not right. People are trying to do things. Social entrepreneurs, we call them that, are being recognized for the work that they're doing, and they're doing things. And some of them are trying to take things to scale. But actually, nobody really quite knows what's going on or knows what to do. So there's a whole discussion. I mean, you were at the World Social Enterprise Forum in Edinburgh a couple of weeks ago. I've just come back from New York, which was where the Schwab Foundation was meeting together. Both of those, one of the themes that emerged was this local versus global. So number of social entrepreneurs saying, no, we have to focus on the local and that's it. We sort out our local area and create some sustainability in that. Others going, no, that's almost immoral. If you find answers, what we should do is be talking to each other and scaling it. And it's clear that people are trying hard. They're coming from the same space, but not knowing quite what to do. So are you a localism or a globalism person in this space?
I mean, again, I'm both. But I think there's a, you know, one of the things I think is if you try and get really underneath the skin of what a new ism is. For me, there are lots of things that represent what a new economy looks like versus what the current economy looks like. But there are kind of the big vectors in there. And for me, one of them is that we live in a very externalized world. So our ideas of value are very externalized, you know, very objectified. There's very much a sort of progress demands proof idea, mm-hmm. where again you revert to old ways of measuring things in order to make decisions about what to do next and where funding goes. It's all very external and objectified. And similarly, if you think about the way we teach our children, you know, they're given a sense of this is what the world looks like, these are the boxes you can choose, you become what other people decide is of value, and then go out into the world and become successful vis-a-vis others' ideas of value. I think what sets social entrepreneurs and creative entrepreneurs apart is that there's something very internally driven by that. You know, so there's a sense of agency that has a different, you know, different priority and a different value. So I think it's for all of us, to be honest, to make a decision or just understand where can you bring the most value and the most service into this new space. And for some people, that is a very local thing. So some of the most extraordinary entrepreneurs in the world, social entrepreneurs in the world, are living and innovating and have done incredible things driven by very, very local priorities and by their communities and by an issue that's incredibly close to their hearts. Others of us, you know, I've traveled around the world and been privileged to do jobs that have a level of scale about them, where, you know, I tend to think about things in quite a big picture perspective that feels to me like my story. So I don't think, again, it's either or. I think it's about us all being very honest about where we can make the biggest difference and making a commitment to doing that, and then thinking about who we need to work with in order to take your particular contribution and, you know, make that part of something bigger.
That's particularly true. I think it's kind of, in some ways, it's how people are. So I'm speaking to a wonderful woman, Patty, who is Mexican, just there at the weekend. And her view is, no, I'm sorting out the area in Mexico, and she's committed to the environment and proper farming, as she would call it. She does a fantastic job, but she says, I'm not. It's only relevant to my area and my country. I'm not going to tell anybody else what to do. And she's passionate about that. But others will kind of then talk about, no, you know, in a sense, we all need to be collaborating together and learning from each other and working together. And I think you're right. It's a kind of a question of us respecting each other. But again, I'm interested in you talking there about your own kind of career, if you like, or your own journey. And, you know, you've been around the world a bit, and you know, you were in China, for example, in Beijing. Are there the same issues around the world, do you think, that are emerging? So it doesn't matter where you are, in what country, it's the same, that the rich are getting rich, the poor are getting poorer, the people are falling off the edge, and the solutions are potentially around social enterprise, which I know you've majored in on and worked hard on in that area.
Yeah, I think fundamentally the issues are the same. There are issues of inequality, there are issues of lack of opportunity, there are issues of people feeling like they don't have a voice, or, you know, they don't have a place. You know, youth unemployment is a huge issue. You know, women's empowerment is a huge issue. Those issues manifest differently in different countries, so there are not solutions in the same way. And again, this goes to ideas of what kind of frameworks we need, or ways of philosophizing about a new economy we need, because as much as there is huge value in thinking about new instruments for social enterprise and investment, and debating a lot about, you know, what that is or is not, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as much as people being able to hold on to the values around a sense of building community and enterprise and possibility in individuals, young people, and communities who wouldn't otherwise feel like they had that option. Mm-hmm. Governments feeling like there are solutions out there that they can think about and embrace. And, you know, there are so many amazing intermediary organizations all around the world popping up, you know, whether they're hubs or, you know, social investors, or who, you know, are genuinely there building capacity and wanting to do the right thing in quite, you know, to some extent, small spaces, who with the right kind of connections and support can make a huge difference. So I think context matters a lot. I think being able to share ideas of what's possible matters a lot. And, you know, we can make a lot of things happen by just creating space and visibility around what's possible.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a lot of positive steps being taken. And it's not just a question, you know, sometimes I'm describing it, it's not just people who are kind of starting up a little project that employs two people. Actually, there are themes that start to emerge. Mm. So I'm always going on that. If you look at what's happened, people came up with the concept of fair trade, then there's a kind of sector of fair trade that's emerged around the world. There's a sector that of called microfinance. There's the whole impact investing or social investing, which is emerging as a sector. But in each of those sectors, they're not perfect. I mean, they have their critics. You know, the impact investing area, for example, it's very young, actually. Some people are really against it, as you'll know, and some people swear by it. And it seems that actually we're getting more mature. It's gone past the stage of kind of projectitis, if you like. It's people are kind of going, no, what is it we're creating? Can we actually build some value and some systemic value or systemic change, if you like, within these sectors? Is that something you're seeing that you think is emerging? And are we being critical enough of ourselves, or maybe we've been too critical?
I mean, I think this is a hugely interesting space of the whole debate, and I think it is something that, from my perspective, has shifted a lot in the last 18 months. So there are absolutely lots of different, you know, you can describe them as camps or different ways of describing components of a new economy. The challenge, and, you know, I've seen this over the last 4 or 5 years, for very legitimate reasons, there is a default to defending your position.
Yep.
So whether you're in a social enterprise space or a social investment space or, you know, a B Corp space, or that there's these things begin as innovations and almost offers into something bigger, but can quite quickly become sort of communities of their own that are more concerned about defending themselves than they are about looking for points of connection. One of the things that I think is fundamentally different between a competitive and a collaborative economy is that the competitive economy is essentially all about separation. It's about individualism. It's about, you know, who's at the top, who's winning, who's separate. a collaborative economy is fundamentally about unity. Without being too romantic, that's just the case. But back to the point of we're used to valuing things based around a certain set of criteria. And so I think it's perfectly understandable that movements like the social enterprise movement get to a point where all of a sudden there is a level of currency and profile, and the tendency is to then try and define and protect and sort of maintain that space. Mm. Meanwhile, the world is shifting hugely.
Yep.
And I think it takes serious leadership. It takes a lot of bravery to sort of concede various points. You don't need to win every argument. You know, it's that sort of whole winning the war, not the battles. And I think at the moment, there's a very interesting sense of various movements recognizing that they really do need to be part of one bigger narrative, one bigger story, because the issues are too big, they're too interconnected, and we're not going to address them with the best will in the world. We might have a bunch of great stories about, you know, impact investment successes. We might be able to point at however many hundreds of social enterprises that have scaled, you know, vis-a-vis a VC model. We might be able to look at the social enterprise movement and tell a story of how it's now this size as opposed to this size. But all of those things don't point to a serious new, you know, economic reality. And I think there is, for me, there has been a big shift in the last 18 months where it feels like there's more of a recognition that that space has to change. And there is, you know, a level of challenge that we should be giving one another to say, you know, it's time to just get a little bit beyond our own rhetoric and step into a new space that we don't actually know how that's going to work. And we don't, and, you know, I remember going back to, again, the olden days in Scottish enterprise, Charlie Woods, who was our director of society at the time, used to say, there's no limit to what can be achieved if you don't care who gets the credit. And I think that's a hugely important mantra for the space that we're all in at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely picking this up at the moment. I don't know whether it's 18 months, but more recently, people have been talking about these collaborations again. This meeting I was at in New York, the Schwab people, which is social entrepreneurs from all over the world talking together, there was much more about how do we build a movement, if you like. I mean, I don't think there were any answers came up, but the fact that people, and Schwab is 20 years old, this social entrepreneur organization. And if I go back 20 years, because I was involved in it 20 years ago, it was very much of like, this is who we are, and describing these new kids, if you like, that arrived on the block, and explaining and then talking about it to scale. Now we're talking about how there's collaboration and what a movement might look like. There's some pushback against it. But I would definitely agree with you that there's something going on just now, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of chatter, if you like, in this speech, which I think is my sense is positive. Mm. But then, you know, I probably also have a kind of view that, you know, we're building something. So your first flush of building something, actually, you kind of go, well, that's it. Let's move on to the next one. So in terms of the social enterprise movement, it was interesting. I was at the Edinburgh event that you were also at. I was chairing a debate, which was, social enterprise, it's all about impact versus
there.
Oh, you were there,
yeah.
Versus no, it's about the structure. And I was surprised, I think most people were, that we came to the kind of vote at the end and the structure won. Mm. So people were saying social enterprise is all about the structure, and I think that was a kind of indication. It was well argued, I have to say, the debaters argued it well. That actually, maybe you as we're moving along here, you get to point A, or the first point, and then you stop, that's what you're doing, and then you're building something else on top of it. And these are building blocks, in a sense, and that's why you're getting this no, we're about the structure. I don't know, what did you with that debate?
I was thought? There for the second half of it. I agree, it was very well argued. I would have gone on the other side, as you're probably not surprised.
No, not surprised.
So, yeah, there's an argument around the structure and the methodologies, and I think it's a really, really, really relevant, strong, important argument. And I completely agree that, you know, we're living in a world where battles have been hard won to get to a point where you're talking about social enterprise in any kind of mainstream way, which we now are. And there's lots of evidence and data that begins to present social enterprise in productivity terms. So we can talk about the fact that there are more women leaders in social enterprises. We can talk about the fact they're more resilient than your average SMEs. We can talk about, you know, all sorts of facts, data from the UK, from the work that Social Enterprise UK has done over many years for their State of the Sector reports. And the British Council has been working with SE UK and others to do similar State of the Sector mappings in, we've now done them in 13 or 14 different countries. And what's interesting is they're very different countries. So Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Greece, Jamaica, similar statistics come up. So there's a lot of evidence that you can put into what we would acknowledge as a, you know, an economic framework and a storyline about productivity that we're all familiar with, that tells a very resilient story about social enterprise. And that's important. It's particularly important to people who have been doing this work with very little recognition for decades. But I think one of the reasons why we default to thinking that we need more of that is because we don't have a coherent enough larger narrative around the values and the philosophy and the sort of economic storyline. You know, we're still, back to my point, we're still arguing the value of social enterprise vis-a-vis our idea of what economics means. Yeah. And what we're missing is a new idea of what economics means. If we had a strong, compelling, collective, inclusive new idea of what economics means, then I think most people would default to going, we know this is more about our hearts than our minds. That's actually part of the new philosophy. Mm-hmm. That's part of the point.
Yeah.
That's just not safe enough right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the job for, you know, those of us who see that, believe it, think it, you know. So my point is, again, this is not an either or, it's 100% a both and. And one of my favourite quotes, and it was actually the only quote I put in my PhD, which I did 15 years ago, which wasn't about social enterprise, it was about the difference between a competitive and a collaborative economy. And it's a quote from C.S. Lewis, which is that you don't get second things by putting them first. You get second things only by putting first things first.
Yeah.
If you put second things first, basically you lose both. And we live in a world where we've put secondary things as primary. So we're so used to structure and definition and methodology and objective ways of looking at the world as being primary. You know, those are our safe spaces. We treat collaboration, human relationships, co-creation, you know, all of the soft stuff, heart, that stuff is, you know, we love it, but it's secondary. You know, it's not the important stuff, really. It's the sort of nice stuff that you do at home or with your friends at the pub. It's not the hard stuff. And I think part of the revolution of thinking about economics differently is that that stuff has to become part of, no, this is what matters primarily. And the other stuff is really important infrastructure to achieve that. But the minute you start making that more important, then the minute you're in danger of going in the wrong direction.
Yep, I totally get you. So I'm interested in this concept of a collaborative economy, because the critical immediately come back and say, well, the only way it works is we've got to have growth. And that's how you measure it. And growth, growth is connected with the circulation of money, and the circulation of money creates jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's the standard. So in a collaborative economy, how's the money flowing in your view? Because that's the hard bit here, I think. It's how do, you know, people talk about new measures like happiness index and so on and so forth, and that there's a lot of sense in that. But how do we organize our money, this currency, so that we create the climate?
I'm not going to give you any expert answers on anything about how you organize money, because it's just not my sort of lens or area of expertise. What I think is we allocate money at the moment, again, based on ideas of return on investment and structures that are legitimate ways of channeling money that don't work for the majority of people. You know, that's why things like microfinance were such innovations and are still, to some extent, you know, challenged by people because there's such a different way of thinking about money. So I, I guess from my perspective, there's two things. One of them is that we need to find different ways of channeling money where we are not, we have looser or differently framed ideas of what return on investment means. So I think it's, you know, I get quite lost in a lot of the debates in impact investing conferences around...
You're not the only one, I think.
around the way that we think about social investment, because it, you know, I listen to a lot of conversations and think, I'm just not sure where the social bit in any of this is. You're essentially talking about using the same logic of return, maybe directed towards organisations that have more of a social purpose, but you're not, but the conversation about what is value and what's return is no different. So I think there has to be spaces to change that. And I think that the people, you know, in the impact investing space who are making those decisions have to have a certain level of courage to do that themselves, you know, from the sort of supply side, as it were. From the demand side, I think we need different ways of elevating opportunities to invest so that they actually feel like they can be, you know, for as long as our decisions about smart return on investment from a social investment perspective are based on Silicon Valley VC models of what scale and impact look like, then there's going to be limited genuine systemic change. So how do you put different sorts of opportunities and different kinds of pipelines, and pipelines that are not just organizations but are communities or, you know, various systemic issues that there's a collective of organizations that need investment in order to change an issue at quite a fundamental sense. And there's some opportunity for investors to A, see that and make a decision on whether or not that's something they want to invest in. Somebody somewhere with enough authority needs to figure out how that is accredited in a way where people want to do it. So that's one thing. But the other thing for me is that, you know, we're still talking about financial capital as the only concept of capital. I don't think it is. I think social and creative capital are huge assets, and we don't give them any kind of credit in any way other than sort of, you know, again, a sort of secondary nod. So we love to do nice videos of a great story of, you know, a Moringa farmer in Ghana, or, you know, a woman in Pakistan who's created a sustainable business and is now supporting other women in her community. We love those videos. They're 3 minutes long. We play them at our big conferences. Everybody feels good. But we don't take it seriously in any kind of, that's capital. That's a story of asset. And so at the Social Enterprise World Forum, you know, a couple of the entrepreneurs from Ethiopia who we had there, if you listen to their stories, these are people who have taken an issue, so creating a private ambulance service, or, you know, creating TV programs for girls that now reach millions and millions of people. So Brooke D, who won the Social Enterprise of the Year Award in New York last week, World Economic Forum Award. They were in Edinburgh. They are two entrepreneurs that we've worked with a lot in Ethiopia.
They're fantastic.
Their stories are, we care deeply as one individual human being about this issue, and we're going to take everything we have, all of our personal assets, support from our family, and turn that into something. You know, years later, social investors are looking at them, and now they're winning awards. But what happened before the money came into the picture? Personal, creative capital. I mean, that's sheer human determination and expression and will. And social capital, you know, people who were there who supported. And we don't take any of that into consideration. If we actually, as alongside the money, if we were thinking, how do you really, and so this is, you, sometimes I talk about the idea of an economics of empowerment, you know, there's a sense of how do you empower people to really build their idea of, you know, what a sustainable economy looks like for their families, for their communities, whatever scale that might be. It's not all about money. You know, people can do extraordinary things without money, with support, with recognition. And yeah, resources, always, you know, it's necessary, it's part of the picture, but it's not the only part of the picture. And I, for me, that's part of the storyline of the new economy, that it's not all about money.
Yeah, basis, but then we have to work out how we survive and live, I think that's it. So tell me a little bit about the work you're doing at the moment with the British Council and Social Enterprise. You've been doing this for a while, you know, we said earlier you're over in China. So what is it you're doing? Is the British Council got a kind of strategy here to support social enterprises globally? I'm just very interested in hearing what that is, because that's a British Council long established institution, and here it is on an edge of new thinking and new development.
So the British Council has for the last 10 years been involved in social enterprise. For the first five, it was essentially capacity building programs, so training social entrepreneurs and would-be social entrepreneurs, largely in China and Southeast Asia. 5 years ago, I joined the British Council. We've grown since then into a global program where we're supporting entrepreneurs around the world, training them, providing capacity at different stages. So some of it's very early stage, you know, citizenship to social action. Some of it is looking at sort of later stage investment platforms. But alongside that, we've also been working in education systems. We've been working on social enterprise education in schools with support from the Social Enterprise Academy and various others. We have done a huge amount of work in the policy development and government engagement space. So we've been working with governments around the world on thinking about how you address issues of economic inequality and look at various, you know, policy instruments, regulatory instruments, social value acts, those types of things, to really think about, you know, how you reframe the way that we look at social enterprise and economy from a government perspective. We've also seen a huge shift in the international development space, so increasingly we're working on large-scale contracts where social enterprise and investment are seen as modalities, as it were, for supporting, you know, poverty reduction and various other issues that are generally addressed through international development opportunities. Within the last year, we have moved into a slightly wider space, I guess, recognising that sort of two of the key areas that both the UK is very strong in and are sort of core to work the British Council does, our social enterprise programme and our creative economy programme. So we've been looking at a slightly different hypothesis, which is if you bring together social enterprise and creative enterprise, and if you really look at how that operates at the policy, intermediary or institutional and individual level, and do something at scale that has a very clear focus on addressing issues. So we launched a new program in March called DICE, which is Developing Inclusive and Creative Economies. that's a £10 million program over 2 years, focused on five countries at the moment: Brazil, South Africa, Egypt, Indonesia, and Pakistan. And there we're working with our teams in those countries and a variety of partners to really think about the policy space, where we launched a DICE fund. We just launched collaboration grants in the last couple of weeks, where we're encouraging UK social and creative enterprises to partner with social and creative enterprises in each of those five countries to come together and create projects where they are looking at how they work in those countries to address issues of youth unemployment, disadvantage, and women's empowerment. So it's kind of building on the work that we've done, but taking it to a different level of scale and ambition and a different level of focus in terms of what the real challenges are that these, you know, the social and creative enterprise, you know, we can tell great stories about them as sectors, we can tell great stories about, you know, what they've done around the world and what they mean for the UK, but how do we get to a point where we're really thinking about how they come together to form a different sort of, you know, systemic story of we're going to really think about addressing some of the big challenges in those emerging economies.
So that's fantastic. I mean, that's such a heart. I mean, it just makes you feel, oh, wow, that's great. And it's a kind of, I don't know, the British Council can be called an institution, but it's a major organization. It's coming into the space. It's providing a bit of capital, good thinking, and, you know, we're going, well, let's see the impact of this, because it's quite considerable. And then you think, well, if other organizations of similar sizes started to think about differently, this is how you begin to, actually, it's not going to scale isn't the right way of putting it, but how you begin to make major influence. But I've really enjoyed talking to you, and, you know, I suspect we could do this for another 2 or 3 hours. But I have one just final question, because when we spoke last in Edinburgh, we talked about the Enlightenment period in Scotland, and we're both Scots. And then we said, are we living, is this the new Enlightenment, a new Enlightenment? And Scotland, actually, because there's so much discussion going on about different aspects of life there, and a kind of view of the people in the DNA, it's in their DNA, we want to create some different things based on values. Is that something that, was just us chatting away and getting carried away, do you think, in that conversation? Or is there something really happening in Scotland that is about a new Enlightenment, and that new Enlightenment's in Scotland, it's happening around the world, and we should be positive about the future?
I think it's happening around the world. I think it looks different around the world, but I think the fundamentals are the same. I mean, I do a job that is, it blows me away just how privileged I am to spend the time I do with the people that I get to spend the time with. And I'm, you know, I mean that on at every single level. What really struck me in Edinburgh was we had a delegation of 120 policymakers and intermediaries and entrepreneurs with us. We had a large number of ministers, and I hosted a lunch with the Scottish Cabinet Secretary for Communities and Local Government, Aileen Campbell, and the 15 or 20 government ministers that we had with us from Indonesia, Greece, Australia, Canada, Sudan, Pakistan, and Ethiopia, and probably others that I've missed, New Zealand. And so at that lunch and in other conversations, what really struck me was that at that sort of government level, the sheer gratitude for being involved in conversations about what's happening and how they're part of it. So they don't want to just show up and be ministerial. They want that kind of R&D space to really learn and be inspired and think about what happens next. And I think that's just representative of the fact that, you know, there's a huge appetite and a huge demand for, you know, what is this? What's happening? What does it mean? So I think that's global. And I think that for all of the things that have traumatized most of us in the last 2 years that have happened around the world, the upside of that is just a sort of starkness of we need something new. So I don't, you know, I think that's a global thing. I think Scotland holds a very, you know, precious place in all of that. I genuinely do. It's, for me, it's very interesting because it is 20 years since I joined Scottish Enterprise, and there were certain emotions I had at the time as a young single parent, and certain conversations that took place, a sort of height of conversation and a breadth and a depth of conversation that, you know, I haven't found everywhere since. And I remember we talked about the haves and the have-nots. We did all the scenario planning. We talked about things that seemed ludicrous at the time, but actually are now the storyline of our world. Managing the Global Scot Network, which was very much about Scotland's pioneering spirit. And I think at the moment, when you describe what's happening in Scotland around the sort of social enterprise space, what sets it apart is a sense of values, for sure, and also just a sort of, it's in a quantumly different place in terms of thinking about how you integrate the idea of social enterprise into your national economic development strategy and how you integrate it into your international economic development strategy. That's, you know, that's not happening everywhere else. So absolutely. Scotland is genuinely in a much deeper place in terms of understanding both the two things for me which are most fundamental. One is the values piece in all of this, and two is the systems thinking piece around all of it. So yeah, I think Scotland is has got a huge amount to offer and should absolutely be thinking about itself as a leader, but a generous leader. That's going to set, you know, that's the difference. From my perspective, that's the difference between new economic development and economic development. You know, it's not competitive in the same way. So it's not about we're doing it better than other people. It's we understand this and we're going to share how to do it.
So one word, optimist or not? You're an optimist.
100%.
So Mary, really great talking to you. Really enjoyed that conversation. Obviously, there's so much going on. You're seeing it in the world. I'm seeing it as well. And we want to move to the space where we end up with this newism around these values and these new systems. And I think you and I both agree we'll get there one day. So thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Mel.
For Mary, a newism is centred on a collaborative economy and transforming what we mean by success. Let us know if you agree. Get in touch via Twitter @NewismTalks or via our website, newismtalks.com. See you next week.